It's just that Ross is a punk, you know what I mean? And it's like, if he shows up, dude, you know, trying to say anything crazy, like, I don't know, man. It's about to go nuts. Thought he'd show up by now. Oh, there he is. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Comedy Fix. It's Chris Alvarado here with my buds Jamie and Sam, and today we have a special guest, somebody that I used to perform with three or four lifetimes ago, somebody who I've always been jealous and in awe of his talent. It didn't make sense to me, and I just admire and respect. Make some noise for Ross. Ross, thanks for being here. Ross Bryant, pardon me, not just Ross. Ross
That's
Bryant.
The name.
thank you. Likewise. Love performing with you as well, Chris. What a joy.
What a joy.
And it's good to meet you, Sam and Jamie.
Ross, approximately what year do you think we met? When was our playground years?
God, I mean, that was like we were both coasting the early wave of that second improv bubble. So that would have probably been 2004. We
That's
met
right.
20 years ago, I bet. Yeah. As baby improvisers in Chicago.
That's right. And it's funny. I was over at Second City. I know obviously you spent time at Second City. You were at IO, but we found each other at the Playground Theater, which was a little indie space where you could get a little more stage time.
Yeah. I feel like in Chicago at that time, the big institutions were Second City, IO, and Annoyance. But for anybody who was like really desperate to just start performing right away, there was this other space, the Playground, that I guess the LA analog would be something like the Clubhouse, maybe.
Yeah.
And they had this whole little, they were a co-op, so they were kind of owned by this board of people who kind of managed everything. And it was very like scrappy and self-startery. And they had a program called the Incubator Program where you auditioned, and it was people of all experience levels, people who just moved to town and people who'd been there for like decades. And you auditioned, and then you got put in these quote unquote incubator teams. And the whole deal was, unlike these other places where you'd kind of get put in the hopper of classes forever, if you were on one of these teams, you started doing shows right away. And you kind of learned by doing, which was very cool. And then there was this whole other thing where I guess like, as you performed, that board that ran it would select your team to continue performing, and you could kind of become like one of their house groups. But the main reason I was stoked about it was just I wanted to perform right away after moving to Chicago, and Chris and I were placed on one of those teams together.
And I think we ended up becoming a house team.
I think so. Yeah,
I think so. It was and for anybody out there who just. It's like, I remember I saw those guys. The team name was the Space Robbers.
The Space Robbers. It's as good as any other like improv team name.
Yeah. As good as any other. We actually had a vote on this, guys. We had a vote. We had to like put our heads down and raise our hand. And I don't know if Ross remembers this, but this is very interesting to nobody else. So sorry, everybody. But so we voted. It was like on a couple names, and we landed on Space Robbers. And then we got an email as a team, and I don't know if you recall this, from Anon Emus at maybe Yahoo, and it said. It said this first sentence, like a bad hangover, we woke up with a terrible name. And it was somebody on our team trying to say this name is not good. And then I don't want to mention names because this isn't that type of podcast. I'm not kidding you. I'm saying 18 months later, we're at a bar after a show, and one of our teammates says to me, like a bad hangover, I woke up and there he was. And this, and like, was telling a different story. And I was like, that's the thing, unless it.
Yeah, and you're their end of Usual Suspect. All the things are coming together. talk about a decision that could not have been more low stakes. It was, but like, yeah, Space Robbers was a totally nonsense name, but like you do after you spend some time with it, a lot of affection. That was such a fun thing to be a part of. It was just fun to be on stage after moving to a city from a small town.
Ross, we're going to crack this open, just talk broadly, but one more memory that you may or may not have, but to me, it's pretty, I don't know, detailed. We were leaving a Space Robbers rehearsal, and we were walking south on whatever major street that is. I don't know, like a Clark or a something, because we were we had rehearsed at some like park, like Parks and Rec room.
Probably like at a Parks and Rec building at a rehearsal that probably started at like 10 p.m. or something.
And I remember occasionally we would get like dollar martinis at this place. But anyway, I'd ask you, what's your plan? What are you up to now? And you said, I'm going to audition for this improvised Shakespeare thing at I.O. And I was like, oh, and like in my head, like I did some Shakespeare at my community college. Like I could probably, I didn't sign up for it or anything. I said, all right, man, later. And you went off and did that. And then, holy shit, did that fucking blow up?
It has stood the test of time.
How many years have you been doing that now?
I think that was probably in 2000. I mean, almost 20 years, like 18, 19, almost. Yeah. Long time. I've never been a part of a creative project for longer, for sure. And it was so cool. I'm glad we had a period of grace to kind of find our legs for a year before it really found itself.
Yeah. And boy, has it. I mean, Sam, you caught them when? Like last month, 3 weeks ago?
A couple of weeks ago in Philadelphia.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, played the Kimmel Center. And then we were up at Steel Stacks. And so we saw the show again up there.
Awesome.
But it's cool. I mean, I used to live in LA. And so I'd go and see the shows there. And I mean, the two things that are so amazing to me about it are, one, how consistently funny it is. And the other was sort of like the variety of funny that's in there. Is like there's nonsense and there's physical stuff and there's really intelligent stuff and there's really dumb puns. And it's just like, it's such a cool entertainment experience. I'd just be kind of curious how you guys think about that show, you know, and maybe that's changed over the last 20 years. I'm sure it has.
Probably. Yeah. That's all very kind of you to say. Thank you. Thanks for coming. That's nice to hear, because I feel like unspokenly we try to do all of that stuff. The Shakespeare format affords us so much leeway to stretch out in all these different ways. Like, it gives you the space to play really emotionally and do a bunch of wordplay and really dig into like the bleeding edge of your vocabulary, but also dig into the dumbest stuff imaginable. And hopefully have a semi-coherent story, sort of like an actual kind of theatrical experience. Mm-hmm. I love how it's kind of found itself over the years.
When you say theatrical experience, I love that. I would imagine it's not just at this point, it's not just improv fans going, obviously that's a part of it, but are you reaching general theater audiences? You know, who's your audience? I'm sure it's wide is what I'm asking. Like,
yeah, more so now. It's changed over the years. Like, at first it was improv audiences, and on tour, our first kind of like road shows would be at colleges. And so it was more like the youth. And now as our touring is getting us into more performing arts centers like the Kimmel Center, now it's like we'll do shows in front of like a performing arts center subscriber base, which is significantly older than those previous audiences. And also people where the first 15 minutes of the show almost catches them up and educates them as to what improv even is. Like, I think at our first shows at a new space that's like a performing arts center, a lot of people come to the show thinking that they will yell out the title of a real play that we have the canon in our memory, and they shout out a real one, and then we'll kind of do it to the best of our ability from memory. And often in a new space, the first 10 to 15 minutes of the show plays in almost silence as the audience is kind of like catching up to like, okay, it's being made up, and this is at heart a comedy show. And by the end we'll have them. But like, it's interesting to see like that older theatrical audience requires that kind of like education. And now I think it's reaching more like, I'm seeing more kind of younger comedy savvy people coming in from like being aware of it via podcasts or like online stuff. And so it's a cool mix, it seems, of like theater heads and comedy heads, which was kind of another goal of the show, is to kind of bridge a divide between like the theater world and the comedy world.
Let me ask, we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, the process of like devising and a group finding its voice. You know, what you mentioned that, you know, you had a grace period at first where you were still discovering it and kind of creating it. What did that process look like for you guys? What were you trying? How are you coming to group consensus? How are you able to manage that? Cause I don't, you know, I feel like a lot of groups don't really have a direction and they kind of just do the Herald because they don't know anything else.
Yeah.
So what would you suggest? What was your process like?
And the structure of the show, in as much as it has one, is very based on the Herald. Like if you see three shows, you'll see it's generally like a prologue is kind of the opening. And then there's generally three scenes. Mm. And then there's like a group game and then a run out. And that tends to be like the structural bones that and there are shows that don't follow that structure at all. But that was a deliberate choice from the beginning. But I feel like the sort of Shakespeare of it was, at first it was really like kind of bad parody of it. It was like, you know, a lot of eths, and
it, sure.
the show was less rhymey. And we didn't really have a handle on the Shakespeare of it as much. It was more of a parody of it. And over the course of a year, those as the cast began to really take shape into the form that it kind of still is now, the real big moments that solidified the voice of it were the rehearsals became really academic, where we began to have like vocabulary quizzes and reading assignments. And at the time, Blaine, who is the sort of director, creator of the show, was still getting his PhD at Loyola in Chicago. And he had a colleague in the philosophy department who taught a Shakespeare in philosophy course. And this guy, just totally out of the goodness of his heart, was like, I'll lead a seminar for your cast. And we were like, okay. And then Blaine was like, okay, we all have to get our bona fides up for this class. So let's all read Plato's Republic together. So we had like a little book club going into what was essentially like a undergrad level Shakespeare, like critical analysis course that we did week by week for 6 to 8 months. And that, I think, was the thing that really locked in a sense of the tone, where we all began to take the language of it more seriously. We all started reading the plays more. And so that was one level. The other level was, from the beginning, it was always like the whole, this is very in the improv weeds, but the goals of it were all find a character with a big want. That's the thing that drives you through. That's the thing that creates the illusion of a plot happening. Less planning, more just focus on a clear want. And then once that, with that plus the Shakespeare dork out, that laid the initial foundation, and then everything else just kind of snowballed from there. To try to like the quality and the consistency of the rhyming and wordplay got better. The more we studied the Shakespeare, the language got richer and denser, the less it became a parody. And the more we really attempted to do an homage and try to do it as close to Shakespeare as we possibly could, knowing that would forever exceed our grasp, of course, but like really going for it. And also in the middle of all that came like the big emotional aspect of it, making us make these big physical choices as well. So if you watch a show, another typical thing you'll see is us crawling all over each other. Like we're constantly like picking each other up and like flinging each other around, and which is the kind of thing that you can only do when you've got a lot of rapport and safety with one another. And that's just a result of the longevity of it. And we throw each other around way more or less because we're now much older and prone to injury. But if you'd seen shows 6 years ago, we would have been taking far more foolish risks.
I love that so much.
Incredible. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. And as much as obviously we could do an entire hour on just that topic, I want to move on a little bit because Ross, you have so many, well, I don't know you that well, but it seems like you have so many passions in your life, different things that really spark you. And you seem to have, again, from the outside, found projects for a lot of the things you enjoy doing, singing or some rapping or all this stuff. Like, what a fun and assumingly satisfying place you're in performance-wise. You do a lot, and it's all things I assume you enjoy doing. That's really fun. I don't see a lot of people being able to do that. They find the one project, they just have the Shakespeare, or they just have the thing, but they want to dip their toes in other things. You seem to have done that. Tell me about kind of how you began to, curate this kind of performance life you have.
That's also very kind to hear. A lot of it is like super accidental as well, where, I don't know about you, but there were probably North Star shows of yours when you first moved to Chicago, and probably with Jamie and Sam also, and whatever scenes you were a part of. The show that made me want to move to Chicago was Baby Wants Candy, this musical improv show that played at IO every week. And it's one of these things where like all improv team names sound ridiculous. And when I tell people that like my Road to Damascus comedy moment was a show called Baby Wants Candy, it's like, okay. But it truly was like, blew my mind out of the back of my head as a college student. And I couldn't have even articulated it to myself, but I was like, I want to do something like that or be in that show. And you just pick up those skills, that desire leads you to it. Like doing a lot of short form, like at Comedy Sports in Chicago, really helped like bone up all that stuff. But just kind of integrating yourself in that musical improv scene, then carries over to writing songs, then carries over to, then we, a group, we were involved in this, in a freestyle rap group, and because we were, young and hungry and all dorks about it, we freestyled all the time, and it made us like get way better. And what I'm saying, I guess I'm answering your question by saying it wasn't like a clear goal. It was more just pursuing the passions, and then like, the passion sort of facilitated these little communities coming together that made the skills better. Then going forward, you continue to kind of find each other. So that when I moved to LA, I'd done so much musical improv at that point that like I found like this weird niche at Upright Citizen Brigade, being a Chicago transplant where it was like, no one knows me, like, but the one person on one team knows I was in Baby Wants Candy. So like, hey, come do this musical improv show once. And now that's like all I do there is musical improv. But it is really satisfying having these kind of like little niche passions that you can kind of lean on.
Not only lean on though, and I'm not just saying this because everybody who knows you at all would say this. What's different about you, Ross, is that you fucking excel in all of these things. Listen, I'm sure you have good shows and worse shows and whatever, but Jesus Christ, it's just insane. I've tried my hand at this or that, or I like this, but I only have 7% of my brain to give to it, which is not a lot from this fucking brain. And everything I see you do, a video I see on the internet, a thing, it's always like, Jesus, goddamn Christ. Sorry, I'm getting crazy, everybody.
That's very nice. You're really buttering me up.
Everybody knows that. Everybody knows that about you. And like, I mean, it must be weird to hear or take, but it's just like, it's fun for me to say that. We oftentimes in this podcast talk about how unfortunately we see so much work that doesn't move us. We see so much work that doesn't satisfy us, that doesn't inspire us. And we're not being rude to the shows we're seeing, just like, what's out there. But if I see a show that Ross is in, it's just going to be a good show. And that's really cool.
That's very kind. I'm lucky.
I don't know what to say.
It's really nice. Yeah. It's really nice. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. I'm curious, Ross, and it might even be now, and I'm sure you have more North Stars. generally, you know, what does, this is such a boring question, but like, what does success look like for you? Like, I'm sure you're satisfied in a lot of ways artistically. Are you craving more? Are you pretty full? Is your cup pretty full right now? What does that look like for you?
Yeah. I get a lot of creative satisfaction out of where I'm at right now. I feel very creatively fulfilled. I felt like I had a real kind of coming to terms with this stuff, probably as we all did during the pandemic when everything went away. And I had to kind of grapple with how much of my identity and sense of self-worth has to do with like getting up in front of strangers night by night. And when all that's taken away, you're like, okay, what is left? I think the healthy way to look at it is I just really love that. I'm grateful to have that in my life, and I'll do it as long as I can move around and speak out loud. And so now that I've had it gone for a while, I'm just happy to like do it and do it as much as I can.
But Ross, do you want to be on a TV show tomorrow?
I have all those sort of like industry ambitions as well. And I've got all those irons in the fire also, but I also just kind of, realistically to myself, I've yet to have I've had one or two projects like that that were like, that had that sense of like real deep creative fulfillment and felt great. And by and large, a lot of them are just kind of like, you know, workaday things where you go in, you do your thing, you're done. And it's like, that was cool. It's crass to talk, like to bring money into it, but like, it's nuts that like the thing that you do that's providing you, that provides you so much creative fulfillment, like an improv show, which pays nothing. It feels like it enriches your soul so much. You work for one day on a bizarre commercial, and that provides no fulfillment, but is quite remunerative. So much to say that, yeah, I feel very fulfilled by all these things. I want to keep enriching and developing them, but I have plenty of other ambitions elsewhere to sure. keep.
Yeah. You know,
going as I'm sure as so are we all.
Yeah.
Well, I actually would love to talk about money, not necessarily directly, but you know, how does Shakespeare get into these larger venues in front of these audiences? Is it the hook of Shakespeare that people recognize that draws them in, or is it something else? Is it just the following that you've built up over 20 years? Like, why are so many improv shows, you know, going in the red, you know, and making no money?
I mean, and it's been a struggle to get there, to get here. And because, as you may have all experienced, like years ago, we were trying, we did a residency in New York for at least a weekend a year, every year for the last like 10 years, with the goal of bringing producers in with the idea. Our goal at that time was like, we want an off-Broadway run. We want to do a Broadway run. Like this is our big ambition for this show, to kind of like bring this to like the highest like plateau of theater that we possibly could. And we had those people come, and people who enjoyed the show, but like people were at that time are so gun shy about the improv of it all. Like, because, and that has to do with money. Because you charge $20 maximum for an improv show, and you charge $70 for a minimum for a Broadway show. And so you need something that is not only going to hit, but hit every night and validate that kind of ticket price. And that scares producers off. And so I think only now are we kind of like getting that sort of, I think something like that might happen now. And that's just because like, practically managers and touring agents and stuff can start to wedge you into these rooms that give you the bona fides to open up other ones. So like, for example, we went from doing a lot of those colleges, and we were like, we want to try to do more performing arts centers. We got into one that allowed us to do a much longer run out in Denver, the Denver Center for the Performing Arts. We did a long, long run there. And that was the sort of thing of like, okay, as a proof of concept, can we get into another room like this? And so then we do that. And then we play a comedy festival at the Kennedy Center which allowed us to kind of like get a toehold there. Can we do a weekend at a small theater there? Can we do like a week at a larger theater there? And then a year later, can we do 2 weeks at that theater? And it just sort of builds up. And then certain performing arts centers like the Kennedy Center have the kind of bona fides, all those performing arts center bookers kind of talk to each other. And so then you start to go into more of those rooms, and then that provides you with some clout to maybe get into those rooms that you were wanting to get into 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And there's other stuff involved too, where we totally by random happenstance did we form this relationship with Patrick Stewart, where he like played with us a few times, but like having a celebrity or some vouch for you to that sort of person also helps to open doors. Is like frustrating as it is that that's the case, like it we're blessed to have had that happen, and that helped us out, like get into some of those spaces as well. You just like with all this art stuff, all you need is like one gatekeeper to kind of vouch for you, and then it kind of opens stuff up. But you just gotta fucking keep scrapping until then.
Well, what does that look like behind the scenes, if you can shed some light on that? Like, this sounds like a massive amount of work and strategizing and planning and emails and phone calls and meetings. Like, that just sounds like a full-time job that, you know,
thankfully
you
have to that's have, like, not a manager. My job.
Yeah, yeah, who's doing that, and how, and you know, how is that responsibility shared among the group, if at all?
Blaine, who I mentioned before, is involved with a lot of that, and he's the sort of point of contact between the group and those sort of like managerial types. And then so it's which is I think he's great at what he does as far as all that. I think he's been really savvy about running the show. And it takes all that off our plates. So we just have to worry about doing the show. I think there's another part of your earlier question too, where it's like, what helps? I actually think the show is a very difficult first sell. Like, when I always feel a little bit embarrassed when I tell somebody like, oh, I do this improvised Shakespeare show, and I kind of see their eyes glaze over, because it combines Shakespeare, which everyone hated reading in school, which is infamously difficult and boring and highfalutin and snobby, or has theater kid energy attached to it, for better or for worse, and improv, which has become in the last 5 years a cultural punchline. So I think it really takes, the show is a hard first sell, but thankfully I think an easy second sell. So at these places, like we always do better the second time we go, because people come back and they tell friends. So the audiences are bigger and they're more responsive. And so it takes the work of like, and the faith of the bookers to bring you out that first time. Cause it's tough, especially when all the images attached to your show are a bunch of white guys in, what can kindly be called puffy pirate shirts. I don't know that we're the most photogenic theatrical experience on offer, but
you think that improv has become the cultural punchline just over the past 5 years? It was kind of my impression that that's almost always been the case, or has something changed recently?
I just feel like it's become maybe more so, like in the way, like maybe 5 years ago your friend back home didn't have a concept of what improv was beyond Whose Line Is It Anyway, but now they probably have a friend who asked them to go to an improv class where they saw a show that made them grit their teeth. But it's that's all very cynical. I think the hopeful part of me is like, the reason it has this much cachet and culture is because the writers of TV shows that make it a punchline all did improv classes, and they're all fluent in that language, and that like them making jokes about it is actually coming from a place of affection, of they're depicting themselves up there. And I think that ultimately it's all for the good, because people understand what improv is a little bit more, even though I feel like myself tighten up when somebody who doesn't know what it is asks me about it. And I'm like, Okay, so it's an improvised Shakespeare show, but I promise it's good. I promise it's good, though. I realize you have a picture in your head now of the most annoying thing you've ever seen, but I promise it's good.
That's right. That's right. As a matter of fact, an hour before this podcast, I was at the dog park where I spend most of my days, and I have a group of friends there, and they said, what are you doing later? I said, oh, I'm doing a podcast, actually with an old friend of mine. He has this really popular show, this Improvised Shakespeare, and this gentleman has been doing, he was like a groundling in like 92. He's like, oh yeah, I saw that. You did? He's like, yeah, I saw Improvised Jane Austen. And I was like, oh, that's interesting too. The general genre prov.
Right, there's lots of improvised blank, and we're by no means like, there's hundreds of other Improvised Shakespeare shows. But yeah, that is also like a, yeah.
But you're right, Ross. Pardon me, Ross. I think a lot of those, I mean, some are trying in earnest, but a lot of them tend to be parodies or the eths, like you said. I could just imagine that first one being a hard sell. You're right, those concepts. But then you got 20 years of experience with motherfuckers who know the goddamn fucking deal, and you just smash it. Because listen, if it's a cute idea, if it's a gimmick with a lowercase g, it's not going fucking to the show two if you guys aren't bringing it, and you do consistently, and that's so cool.
I mean, I feel like with all of us, like especially with something with concept, I don't want to. One thing that always frustrates me about improv is the way the preamble of it is like, and it's all made up, and we have to say that so that the audience is all on the same page with us. But there is a part of that where it's like, hey, audience, lower the bar, because we're just riffing up here, and I don't like being given that kind of, I don't like starting with the audience being like, oh, let's see if you can do it. I want to exceed your expectations so wildly that you're like, how the fuck was that even possible? Like,
funny to hear you say. I mean, the prologue is such an interesting opening to Improvised Shakespeare, right? And it's very accessible for a general theater audience. It's just one person standing on stage rhyming in meter, right? But I had a friend, we were talking about the Improvised Shakespeare show, and I was like, you know, you didn't do it here in Philly, but I feel like your name is very much associated with the prologue for a lot of people who've seen the show a lot. It fits into your strengths, I think, with the rapping and freestyle and everything. And so to hear you sort of say, like, you want to go out and wow with that first impression, it's really kind of cool.
Yeah, that's that I think is the job of that moment. It's Joey and I, Joey Bland, who is, I think, maybe the funniest improviser in the world. And I tend to do it most, but everybody does it. And I like, what I like about that moment, especially in front of people that haven't seen it before, is like, if you execute it well, like it's a nice kind of like skill piece, hopefully. But you can feel the audience be like, oh, it's this. And then everybody kind of focus up a little bit more. So like, as they kind of have to get on board with how dense it can be and can kind of catch up to it. And what it's hopefully at its best doing is it's like, you're going to be kind of chasing the show a little bit. Like we're going to try to be like five steps ahead the whole time and come with us. So that hopefully the audience over the course of the prologue is like, okay, we're in good hands. This isn't the corny thing I thought it might be.
Ross, I love the idea of the wow factor. Something that gets lost, I think, lately, or maybe where I am in Santa Monica specifically, which aren't people who want to do this for a living, they're taking classes to have fun, whatever, kind of miss that kind of professionalism wow factor that comes found in you or an Amanda Blake Davis or somebody who's like a professional up there. I know, like, there's a difference. She always like gets the suggestion for Haiti because she's an MC as well. She's not just like meekly walking up. She's welcoming everybody and doing this thing. And it doesn't feel like dorky. It feels really like welcome to a show where we hope to wow you.
I feel like there's something Chicago-y about it. Maybe because like as where we came up, improv was still so connected to the theater tradition that like the second city of it all with the and the ladies and gentlemen and all, it still had a sense of like an evening at the theater.
That's right.
Which it definitely does not have in LA, and I think that's fine. I think there's a sense, there's it can't all be suits and ring-a-ding-ding. And but even with as like kind of casual and like, hey guys, we're all just doing a thing as it can be, if I don't like to slouch through a show. I want to do a show.
We talk about that type of stuff a lot here, you know, who we're doing this for, why we're doing it. And that changes from day to day, show to show. Jamie and I, we have a rehearsal tonight with the team that we're on called Organism. And I call it like my artsy, silly, fun show. It's very, very satisfying, Ross, and just that, like, it's maybe the complete opposite of a Second City, you know, Chicago thing, which I also like the showmanship and the training I have there. But this is just more like connectivity, becoming one, that type of stuff, some organic stuff in there. But I wonder, even though that's so satisfying to me, and I look forward to our rehearsal tonight, you know, this is just, I'm thinking about this now. Does it lack a wow factor for an audience? You know, is it just, you know, Craig and Carla came the other day and Craig said, it was pure play, which I totally agree with. And I love that. And I love that that's the way he saw it. I don't know. I don't know where I went with this.
I think maybe every group finds its own sense of what that thing is. Mm. Every group's rapport is different. Every group's dynamics are different. Every group's contract with the audience kind of is different. And as much as I was like, I don't like shows where that you slouch through, some are amazing. Like there are people who have a casual energy on stage. And just because everyone is kind of on the same page with that, that it has a, as you said, a voice, and we all kind of relax into that energy in the way that, like, you know, the rules of a Fast and the Furious movie and what makes that successful are different from what makes like a Todd Haynes movie successful. And like, I don't go into one expecting to be quote unquote wowed in the same way I do as the other. And so maybe the most important thing then is to know what the goals of a group are. And if you meet or exceed those goals, then you have wowed yourself. And if it's to be like artsy and make mind-blowing connections and have big dynamic physical choices, then if you succeeded on those terms, then I think that's a success.
Love that. Yeah. I was thinking about, we have a show coming up February 17th, and you know, just like every team that's starting off, we actually rent our own space, Ross, and we try to do our own stuff. So it's just for us. And it's really nice that way. We're not part of like any kind of theater or residency or whatever. Just have this, like, we just rent space once a month. Lately I've been doing it, but like, you want to do that for a full house also, you know, and Jamie has been such a really cool partner in that and helping me. What's the word? Like, just trust that because this feels so good and it's so satisfying that that's where I'm supposed to be. Not that that has to happen and also must be on the cover of whatever saying smash hit. You know, it's just, I don't even know what I'm saying anymore, guys. It's just, you know, mishmashing all this together is confusing sometimes.
When I think about how many of my favorite bands are bands that infamously had an audience of six, you know, I like a lot of obscure stuff. I like little cult objects that are treasures that are beloved by a small cadre of people. And the fun thing about improv is that, like, you don't have to be in one group. Like, you can be in the group that's the Velvet Underground, and you can be in the group that's you too. Like, whatever, like, go for it. It's like the rapport and the dynamics of each one will be different. So if one thing is kind of playing to a niche core, then that's fun. That's kind of part of it.
That is cool.
It's interesting. I feel like this idea is in the air. Like, Will Hines just had a newsletter email about like wanting to see fewer hook shows. And I think like people sort of talked about like, what is improv long form without like the Herald, if we're like past it or whatever. And I think, hearing you guys talk, it's like, well, if you've never seen the Herald before, that has a wow factor. Oh, this is 30 minutes, like, improvised, like, wow. If you've seen it before, it kind of loses the wow factor after a while. So then something that's a little bit more organic and playful, like organism can have that wow factor because it's a little bit more of a different kind of show, right? It's just curious to sort of hear this discussion, because I think a lot of people, you know, post pandemic, people are back out again and doing shows again. And it's sort of like, what is this going to look like now? What kind of shows do we want to be making?
Yeah, especially in the wake of so many of the institutions of improv losing their kind of tyrannical grip on the scene. Mm-hmm. Like, now people are at liberty to kind of figure out what they want to do and what's fun for them, apart from whatever the mandates of a particular comedy institution are. And that's a cool little Wild West moment that we're in, where I'm hoping there'll be a lot more diversity, not just of the personnel, but also of the types of shows that we'll see. It's cool. Yeah. And again, it's just, I think it just comes down to having a sense of like what your goals are. And if it's just to have fun, then maybe that's enough. But if you have more complicated or auspicious goals, go for it. So much of improv is just comes down to like, what's the rapport of the people on stage? Mm. If everyone likes each other and is on the same page, then the show's probably going to be successful.
I agree. God, I like the idea of this wild, wild west thing. And it's true. Sam, you just did a solo, you know, improvised sitcom by yourself.
Yeah, that was fun.
And it was really good. And not that you wouldn't do that here, but if your goals were being on a PAC team or an IO team or something, who knows if something like this happens? Maybe I'm just talking crazy, but it's really fun to see you do stuff like that. You know, it's cool.
Yeah, I worked on that show in LA 5 years ago, and you know, maybe I could have put it up in like Acme Theater in NoHo, small enough house, right? Get my six fans would come. And it's crazy to kind of be thinking about some of those projects, and they just sort of like percolate in the back of your head for a while, and then you get the chance to do it. And I think it's really cool because the show I got to do, this guy Dom created it in Philly, wanting to showcase trios, duos, and solo acts, because we don't get to see those a lot, right? And so like the wow factor of that show, which I think is really fun, is it's a little bit more of a, there's a novelty to it for an improv audience a little bit. But yeah, it's an exciting time where I think a lot of people are trying things out and are trying on different influences. And I don't know, I'm kind of curious where it will go from here, because I agree, it does seem a little wild.
Mm-hmm.
Russ, do you teach at all? Well, I took a workshop bit with you a few months ago, yeah. but in general, is that part of what you do?
It hasn't been for a while. I teach a random workshop here and there, but not consistently. I like it, but I'm, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I took a fucking freestyle rap class. I didn't know that something could happen like that. So much fucking fun.
Oh, that's so much fun. That was great in the class. It was so fun. Yeah, that is a really fun one. And because it's nice to just like focus up on one specialized thing, and it's in a more just practical skill, because so much of improv training is like a little ethereal.
Yeah. Also amazed that, you know, 12, 13 people will show up on a Saturday afternoon to do this.
No kidding.
Like, holy
no kidding.
Shit.
People are interested. And it's such a niche, thing, but yeah, I think if people are interested in musical improv, which is its own hyper small scene within a scene,
yeah,
but also like songwriters and just people who are into freestyle and rap, it was fun.
I also love it because that's an improv thing you can do by yourself, right? Like I've taken a couple improvised Shakespeare things, and like I'll just walk around and I'll create a sonnet or whatever, and it's I don't know, I'm kind of curious from like your perspective. It was cool hearing you read books. My trio right now, I think it basically started as a book club that we just like were all books and talking about it.
Yeah.
How do you feed yourself as an artist to, I mean, have the knowledge and to generate, you know, the different material? Like, do you read a lot? Do you watch a lot? What's kind of your practice?
Yeah. I think for an improviser, especially like absorbing, being in a culture sponge is kind of part of it. I read a lot and I watch a lot. For sure. For the Shakespeare of it, to kind of take it a little seriously, I always have a play open. I'm always like reading one of them or tracking it a little bit, or something from the era. So yeah, I like to, I just like, I like art as portal. So, whatever, the book being a portal to the next book. Like I went on a real kick of weird fiction lately. I was reading a bunch of H.P. Lovecraft. So then I was like, what are his influences? So I read, Arthur Machen, and then like, who's some other weirdos? So I read like Thomas Ligotti and, Robert Aichman. And so I just like that. Falling down a rabbit hole of eccentric stuff. And it's not like in a show, I'm going to be making like a specific reference to this, rather obscure author or whatever, but that does kind of feed your sense of tone. I think that's the fun of it for me, is like reading a lot, knowing that maybe months from now in a show, I'll get to try on this voice or this vibe.
Yeah.
Is very compelling to me.
That's cool.
I don't recall ever spending time on stage with somebody more and not understanding a lot of the words than when I would see Roz. I think I might have said this to you when I saw you a few months ago at the kid's birthday party. But one time during a show, he called us a bunch of Visigoths or something. And I, you know, I'm such a fucking dope. Yeah. That just stuck with me this whole time, 20 years later. How could you? Where did that come
from? Was it warranted? Probably not.
Yeah, it was warranted.
Scene was set in ancient Rome, Chris.
In the show in Philadelphia, Ross rhymed with the Nordic tree of life, Yggdrasil. And like, I was just like, it was out. It was just crazy. It was just amazing to see, because I love, and we were talking about this a little bit earlier too. It's like, I love seeing people's superpowers on stage, right? And you were sort of saying like, if some people like each other and they're having fun together, it's going to be a good show. And I'm doing a little bit more teaching now, and I have to like remind myself like, hey, what if your want is something that
guys,
you like to do as a person?
Big earthquake.
Oh.
Like, oh yeah.
It's still going here. I mean, I'm in the Valley, I'm in Studio City. That was very big. You know, we get ours occasionally, the pop here, a pop there. That was very, very big, guys.
I just felt some creaks and cracks, yeah. It wasn't too bad here, but a little bit.
Interesting.
Ooh, spooky.
Okay. I won't spend too much time here, just in case the world's gonna end.
Holy smoke.
Yeah.
My wife used to live fourth floor of one of those old like brick apartment buildings in Los Feliz, when there was a earthquake once, and it felt like we were like on a ship.
Oh my
god! Like, you could feel the waves kind of rolling you back and forth. It was so scary.
It's crazy. I worked at ABC for a little bit, and their office building was on those rollers, and yeah, it was just like a boat. It was like sea leg.
That was kind of wild.
That was a big one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like obviously we live here and we experience them from time to time, but this one had some distance and had some shake, you know, it kind of went a while.
Sam, did you feel that over in Philly?
Yeah. You okay, man?
I did. I think there was a little something, but I'm all right. I'm all right. Nothing broke.
But what, you were saying something before Mother Nature cut you off?
It was the idea, and because I had the same word too, Sam, of someone flexing their superpowers. And like when a team of people like each other, that's, You were saying, Sam.
Everyone's flexing their stuff, right?
Yeah, and also like I feel like as a group gains rapport, you have a sense of what each other's quote unquote superpowers are, and you can give each other set each other up to shine, and also just part of that developing of the voice, I guess, that you were talking about is like just discovering what that is for yourself. Like what is the thing I love to do and that I feel as though I can execute really well, and who else gives me like feeds that, or who else is better than me at that, that where if we team up, like we can be the steel that's sharpening steel, like all that stuff.
I mean, does that happen to you? I mean, I'm sure occasionally, but I am curious about that. Cause come on, Ross, you can't just be all super nice and then all super talented and that's it. there's got to be a little bit of fucking this dude up here, dude. What's he? That should be me. Or I could do that. Or I'd smoke this motherfucker. You know, some, you know, this guy occasionally a blip of maybe it's not full out anger, but this maybe like, ooh, that kind of, that's intriguing. That's almost scary. I want to do that. Like, do you?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. You experience some of those kind of pops.
For sure. For sure. I feel like the areas where I feel the like, not like it should be me, but the like, ooh, I really want to do that. I really want to find the roadmap to be able to do that are people who execute a lot of really impressive musical stuff solo. And that's like more written, like, but people who put together really impressive, musically inflected comedic solo work always kind of blow my mind. And I'm like, I would love to try something like that.
By the way, for people who don't know you well or whatever, I mean, I can imagine people might pigeonhole you or send some names your way about some like comedy rapper or something who's doing that, right? I bet that kind of people float that stuff your way. And I don't know if you feel one way or the other about that.
I think that musical comedy is one of the hardest things to execute in a way that doesn't make me want to pull my own eyes out. which means that the people who I see have a really unique and interesting and good take that's executed really impressively, like blow my mind. I'm thinking of like Chris Fleming, the performer Chris Fleming is someone who like I love and is like such a totally unique. He deploys musical comedy in such a unique way. It has nothing to do with clever rhyming. It is everything, but it's so fucking funny.
Sorry.
There's lots.
4.5, 8 miles from Thousand Oaks. That's why I felt it. It's out here valley wise.
Vapors.
Oh, it's just a valley quake. Who cares?
Just a valley quake. All right. What about like, you know, Lil Dicky and stuff? You on board with Lil Dicky? You don't have to go on record and smash.
I have
this
no
guy.
Hate in my heart for Lil Dicky. I mean, whatever. I feel like we've had conversations about this before where I don't know. There's a type of comedy rap, and I'm not saying Lil Dicky is this, but there's a part there's an attitude that some people seem to bring to it where it's like I'm participating in this, but I am also somehow above it. I'm able to, I'm doing this and I'm vacationing through this genre and see how much I wreck it. But I'm set apart. I don't know.
Yeah.
No, so much of comedy has to do with irreverence, but I do love it when I see, like I was on that show Wildin' Out. I've worked with a handful of battle rappers, and like those guys are diligent students of the game, quote unquote. Like they know everything. They can quote everyone. Deep analysts of their craft as much or more so than any fucking PhD English student.
Wow.
And that's why they're good. And I like it when people are really taking it seriously and so that their execution looks effortless. And I especially don't like it when, and I feel like this is way less common now, but I feel like when we were kind of coming up, that was such a common thing of like, I'm a white guy and I'm doing rap. Isn't it funny that this is the whole joke of the thing I'm doing? It's a rap song about normal things. And by normal things, I mean middle-class white guy things. There's an inherent racism to this take. I don't love that.
Roz, are you, you're performing all the time. Do you have any time to go out and see live shows? Are you at all, we talk about this a lot. This is two questions. So are you seeing any shows and, or are you familiar? Are you, what's the other word I'm trying to look with the clown movement? Are you spending any time in there? Do you have a foot over there?
No. I don't see a lot of improv or sketch any longer live. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. I Yeah, I don't got the time much, but and as far as clown goes, no, it's like many of my friends have started to like speak about it, or I've become aware of it as this whole other kind of exciting scene in LA with its own kind of like frisson. But I haven't like done a class or
really
seen that much of it. I think I've really only seen like one night at the Clubhouse that was a clown show, and I think it was the equivalent of watching like a student sort of show, so that's not what I would judge that whole scene by. Especially when so much of that scene seems to thrive on so much a part of it seems to be directly engaging with the audience, and if it's quote unquote going badly, like reveling in it going badly and digging into the things that are making it go badly until somehow the making it bad makes it good again and it comes out the other end. Yeah, I'm intrigued by it, but I haven't really done my homework on it.
I've just spent a little time there. These two spent more time in there, and it's been a fun, refreshing kind of pop. Like, oh, this feels good again. You know, reminds me of discovering improv, kind of.
I know. The people seem to talk about it with this kind of like spiritual reverence, where in the way that like when you first take improv classes and the concept of yes and is blowing your little mind, and you're like, this changes everything. And like clown seems to have that same sort of thing where it's like, I feel free for the first time ever. And I love it. I love it. There is a part of me though that now is a little bit older, being like, I'm very suspicious of cults of personality and the way in which all of these scenes, but clown in particular seems to have some cults.
Yeah, don't worry, we'll have a bunch of TV writers in 10 years talking about how clown is stupid. So
that's right. Yeah, I mean, one thing these guys do is they take a lot of classes, and because of that, I think Jamie, you said it once, like part of it is to go, I forget you said it, like you're almost taking the class to like see if the teacher is worthwhile or something. Like you're also kind of testing them as well, and you've come across some of the more like cultier ones or the not so great ones, and then you found some that are, there's been some gold there as well.
Yeah, the class is usually almost more about the teacher leading it than it is about the actual curriculum, because the teacher can make or break a class one way or the other. You know, you could learn yes and from somebody who's just a genius and it could change your life, versus, you know, somebody who's just there for the paycheck and you want to kill yourself. So yeah, I hear what you're saying. There's a lot of, it is very culty, which is fascinating to me. I don't know if that's an LA thing, because LA is prone to cults in general of all kinds.
For sure.
You know,
if you
think about the Manson family and all these other ones, it's like, you know, LA just breeds cults for some reason. Maybe all these lost souls come to LA hoping to find connection. And so they're easily manipulated by people in power. I don't know.
It's all art. It's all arts pedagogy, I think, because like so much of your sense of self is wrapped up in your creative expression, that when you have like the guru there kind of telling you how to do it, they're not just telling you how to master craft. They're telling you how to be yourself. And like, and it inevitably seems to become this like withholding parent, pleasing child sort of dynamic. And different teachers navigate it in different ways. And
Ross, I asked for some testimonials from some of my students for my website, for my classes. And one of them said, he's part something or other and part 1950s withholding dad.
Uh-oh.
Yes. Anything else, Sam or Jamie, on the way out here, want to ask Ross about? Ross, this is exactly what I wanted, just to shoot the shit with you and just chat a little bit. I don't know if there's anything that I'm missing or anything you guys want to get to.
No, I mean, Chris was very clear that I couldn't talk to you about improvised Shakespeare for the entire hour, but if you've never heard of Beardy Man, he is an incredible solo performer.
Exactly who I'm thinking of, yes.
Yeah, he's really cool.
Friends of mine saw him at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival and they sent me videos, and it was like jaw dropping to me.
That's like, nuts.
All the loopers, that's something where I'm like, oh, I really would love to try that.
Like, he's got like 8 iPads, and he uses his software I messed around with called like Tornado, and he's just like customized everything, and he only has a microphone, and so he can turn his sound into like a drum or a bass or anything or chords. It's just like it's watching a virtuoso solo performer flex, right?
Like truly, it's like it's in that sort of like Reggie Watts sort of world, except like maybe a little bit less comedy inflected and a lot more musical firepower on display. Like Beardy Man, I've seen a video of him like performing at like Glastonbury or some outdoor festival where he's like commanding like an EDM crowd by beatboxing and looping. It's so impressive.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's that one's nuts.
Thanks for spending this hour with us just talking. You know, like I said at the beginning, I've just always been in awe of you, dude, and you're so talented and so cool, and we don't get to spend a lot of time. So this is selfishly me just kind of wanting to spend a little more time with you. I know we all had questions about improvised Shakespeare, but thank you, dude. And I don't know. I think part of me wants you to be the most famous person in the whole world, and then part of me thinks, I don't know, what you're doing is pretty fucking great right now too. You know what I mean? If the fame or whatever took away, not that you're not fucking famous, but if it took away from just all these incredible projects you get to do, that would be a bummer too. So I don't know where that's coming from. I just wanted to say that. I just really respect you so much, dude.
Once again, very, very, very kind. Thank you. Thank you for having me and letting me pontificate so you can cut this together in something that sounds very recriminating. it's great talking to you, Chris. Great to
of course.
Meet you guys.
Last thing, because you have so many
may we all ascend to the heights of fame and fortune and fulfillment.
Ross, do you want to send people anywhere where they can see a list of where you're performing or shows? Do you post that stuff on your Instagram? Is that something you care to share or not at all? You don't.
Yeah, I post. Yeah. I feel like that's the place that I would post it. My Instagram is @RossBB if people want to follow, and that's where I'll put up show promos and stuff. But I'll just say, I don't know when this would come out, but the Improvised Shakespeare Company is beginning a residency at that same Performing Arts Center I mentioned earlier, the Denver Center for the Performing Arts. We're coming back, and we're going to be there, or I will be there from February 14th until the end of March. So like,
oh, nice.
Month and a half. So come on down and see a show.
Beautiful. Awesome. Thanks again, Russ.
Thank you.